could have driven to steel and back.
You could have. Quicker.
Same time.
Okay. Good afternoon.
That's a good comment.
I'm Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered for a work session on case number PU-20-194. This is the case of Keith and Deanna Kessler versus Minnesota Power. We had several days of hearings on this case. We've got briefs from both of the parties that have been filed and a response brief and findings of fact. So I guess this is our first chance to get together and talk to each other about where we're at with this case, what we're thinking, if we need, you know, what, how we want to proceed from here. We can have more than one work session. We can have one work session. We can do however we wish, but the case has been going on for quite some time, so my personal preference is that we try to wrap it up fairly quickly now that we have all the information from the parties. So I think for starters, I think it would be best to frame our discussion around the issues that are laid out for this case. And Brian, I'm going to turn it over to you to kind of remind us what it is we are, what the key issues are. Is there two or three of them that around which we're basing our decision? And then we can kind of proceed from that.
Sure.
And for the record, this would be Brian Johnson.
Yep.
Oh, and I'm sorry. I didn't say that both my colleagues are here, Commissioner Randy Christmas and Brian Crosius, and staff Brian Johnson. And more formalities. I don't have any other opening comments. I was digging down to business. Do either of you?
No.
Okay,
no.
So we will now proceed. Sorry about that.
Sure, no problem. So I printed out our notice of hearing. Issues in this matter are, number one, whether the Section 15 structure was an occupied residence at the time the commission issued its order granting a certificate of site compatibility for the project order, and that would have been the order. Number two was, if the Section 15 structure was an occupied residence at the time of the commission's order, that the commission's order was issued, does placement of turbine number 441 violate the commission's order? If so, what remedies are appropriate? And the last issue number three, at the public hearing, did Minnesota Power withhold information relating to the Section 15 structure from the commission that Minnesota Power should have communicated to the commission? And if so, what remedies are appropriate?
Okay, thank you, Brian. All right, well, we have pretty extensive record on this, and the facts are, I mean, there's a fair amount of facts. There's also verbal things that have been stated that aren't written down, and so in those instances it's he said, she said. And that's a kind of unique situation. I don't recall a case with so much of that in my time here at the commission. So I think because of that, I think we really need to focus very strictly on these three issues and working kind of through them methodically. At least that's how I have approached this case myself. And I have some thoughts, but I wanted to just open it up for my colleagues to share any impressions they have or anything that they'd like to get out on the table on the front end if they so desire. Randy?
I don't know how much of how far you want to go, but I'll just lay out this first part. Ironically, I had a lot of the exact same thoughts. The amount of evidence, I've got my stuff in my office. It looks like full-blown rape case.
Yeah.
that's the volume of information that we have already. And it wasn't until recent days when we, you know, you go through the process of collecting things, and it seems like, yes, there's all this back and forth. And it wasn't until I sat and with a little consultation with legal, but a lot of contemplation mm-hmm. by myself, I think pretty much came to where I'm at on the case. And I finally hit that point by going back to the three things you had Brian discuss and getting back to simplifying the matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not unpersuadable if someone has something that I'm missing, but I've kind of reached my resolution in exactly the way you laid out.
Okay. All right. Brian, any thoughts you want to share?
No. I think I would just be repeating.
Okay.
In maybe my own words, so to speak,
sure.
But generally the same.
Okay. So then I would kind of like to go in reverse order on the three issues, because from my standpoint, and maybe we'll just walk through them and just share what thoughts we have in terms of what evidence exists for each of them. And that is, did the company withhold information that they had at the time of the hearing regarding, how did that one read? Can you read it specifically?
Sure, Ken. At the public hearing, did Minnesota Power withhold information relating to the Section 15 structure from the commission that Minnesota Power should have communicated to the commission? And if so, what remedies are appropriate?
Okay. So on that one, I do not feel like I got any of that, any evidence support that one during the hearing, that they had withheld information that they should have shared with us at the hearing. Now, I think you can make a case that maybe there was information about the locations of the turbine that should have been shared more widely, more specifically in advance, but that's not what that is. That's, did they withhold information from us at the hearing?
Correct.
Regarding?
Just that structure.
That structure.
Yeah.
And so I guess I didn't feel like they did. I didn't get any evidence to that. To support that. So, but thoughts from you guys or Brian on that fact issue?
In this area now, I feel completely opposite of you.
Okay.
By the way, number two to me is almost a non-starter. If number one is
yes,
then with number two, there's a clear violation.
Right.
If number one is yes. And with number one, as far as occupied residents, and I mean, that's what so much of this all revolves around. And I asked Jack Hsu, because our current law, it doesn't apply to this case, but has to do then with inhabited residences. And whether inhabited and occupied, whether it is a distinction, and he really didn't make one. Neither side challenged it. You can look around. There's the criminal code for occupied structure, but not necessarily residence. And there's just so many avenues, which is why both sides are able to argue so much, I think. But to me, this all comes down to number three. And the company was very precise when they wanted to be. When I reread the order that we did in 12 or 13, whenever we did the order.
13. The permit.
I thought I brought a copy of that with.
I think it's in, did I see it in the evidence?
It was interesting that It said, no turbines will be placed within 1,400 feet of an occupied residence. The closest turbine to a participating occupied residence is approximately 1,402 feet. So, I mean, they were down with the level of precision to clarifying between 1,402 as opposed to 1,399. Mm-hmm. Quite precise when they wanted to be. But then they included in their evidence, and it was docket 35 back in that case, exhibit 2, a map showing occupied residences, which includes multiple clearly abandoned residences, which, you know, kind of indicated to me that they were erring on the side of caution and making sure about these residences, that if there was any doubt at all that they were included. And yet they chose not to include this one, because this one could not be just moved a little farther away to, you know, because the slope of the land goes downhill. And company testimony indicated that the person who did the micro-siting didn't recall if he even ever visited that yard. And another person testified that they had no formal, and these aren't necessarily quotes, these are my notes of their what they said, but so I stand to be corrected if I mischaracterize something in my notes, but I don't think I did. There was no formal or routine process to double check whether buildings might be occupied. Well, when you present yourself to a level of being within a couple feet on a turbine from an occupied residence that you're acknowledging, but then you don't even double check to see whether you included them all. To me, that was not presenting the evidence that they ought to have been, and therein is where I guess I come to the conclusion that this turbine is in violation of our order.
So I come at it a little differently. I wasn't convinced that they withheld any information because they had included all those other residents that weren't occupied. And I think there's somebody on the phone that isn't on mute. If you could mute your phones if you're listening in, that would be helpful. And I recall one of the agents being out there seeing it, not thinking it was a struck occupied, just being like it clearly wasn't. They had the plot maps are what kind of get me, because it showed, what's the term they used in the plot maps, inhabited?
There was...
The plot maps had a different term, but suggested it was occupied, and then they made a determination that it wasn't. There was no reason why they would have not identified this and addressed it on the front end. Like, I just don't see any motive for them withholding information intentionally, for them doing any of that. I just don't see that in how they, you know, their procedures or anything else, their history and what they provided. So I don't think they held, I don't feel like on number three that they withheld anything. But when you get to the definition of occupied residence, that's where I feel like the company has failed in this case, in that maybe by the normal or, you know, dictionary definition of occupied, it doesn't fit that strict term. But citing, I think we have the ability to, you know, define what occupied is, and in citing, when you're talking about minimizing impact to the people in the area, which is the whole purpose of citing, is minimize impact on on the residents that are living there, on the environment, and the biological and cultural resources. When you put a turbine up too close to a house that is occupied sometimes and used by the people who own it, that isn't minimal impact. And I feel like they should have consulted and need to do a more careful job of consulting with the landowners, especially those who you have arrangements with on that very same project in different areas. There's plenty of understanding about who owned it and how to get a hold of them. Just ask. That's not hard, and they didn't. And so that's where I feel the answer to number one is, that, you know, maybe not under the strict terms of occupied, but under a fair reading of the siting law, I think you could claim that this residence was occupied, and it should have been. They should have consulted with the Kesslers and moved it and kept the turbine further away. So I would say that, you know, one and two then create a violation and not three.
I think both do, but in reference to your point on number one, since I think so, unless Brian had some comments now on number three too, but in moving to one.
I've had comments for about 5 minutes, but I've been waiting for you two to conclude.
If it's not due some protection as an occupied structure, there are a whole lot of owners of lake homes, rural, you know, for egg production homes, as well as just urban homes around North Dakota that are owned by people that maybe have another winter home that they spend a great deal of their time in elsewhere, that would then not qualify for the kind of protection that I think a lot of those people expect they get from us. So.
And when you guys are ready, I do have some definitions that I can toss out that may be helpful for it. But if Commissioner
Crouch
just
wants
Brian to go first.
Is Brian or that Brian?
You.
This record, if someone's just listening to the audio recording, will be very confusing someday if they go back to it. On number three, I was asked, or the question was, did the company withhold information? And when I was going through the notes earlier, I don't think they necessarily withheld information. But the thing I wrote down and underscored was they failed in terms of due diligence. And to drive by a house and to assume it's not occupied, and not to digress, but I think the term occupied residence is problematic. Is it an inhabitable residence? Because it can be brand new construction. If it sat there for 2 years and no one has ever lived there, say it's a brand new house. Is it an occupied residence? No. Not if anyone, you know, if no one has ever lived there. Is it in an inhabitable residence? And I think it was in 2012 the Kesslers painted that. You don't paint something that you intend to tear down or not use. So, yeah, I think, again, when I underlined, did the company perform the level of due diligence it should have? And I would say you and I are on the same page. I think that's more of the issue and not whether... I don't think there's anything in the record that was substantial enough for me to believe without question that the company withheld. Whether they did or didn't, you know, I'm just going off of the testimony. And there were claims that they did, but again, getting into the specifics, there were bits and pieces that, yeah, I think they could have. They should. It did feel like that structure was excluded, but I have not driven. What is the footprint of that project? 30,000 acres, or it's a big number. I haven't driven out there to see. Are there other houses that weren't on the list? And I asked the question during the hearing, were there other like structures that were considered? And the answer was yes. What I don't know, were there any others that they missed? And that was vague in terms of what we received back. So, but my big question for Brian, and then you can share some definitions, wouldn't legislative intent be that an occupied residence would also be the same as an inhabitable residence? I can't believe a lawmaker would say, well, no one's ever lived there. Say it's brand new and no one has lived there in 5 years. It's never been occupied. By the strictest definition, that's an unoccupied structure. But again, from a lawmaker, lawmaking perspective, or from a lawmaker's perspective, they would have never intended the law to exclude that structure. And okay, that can be ignored because no one's never spent a weekend there. They didn't go out for, you know, in this case, deer hunting, never used it. So I don't know if that is something we need to add to the list for the next legislative session to clean up that definition a little bit more. Because what if there was just a complete housing bust and someone built a brand new development, you know, X number of homes, and that happened back in 2009, 2010 after the market crash. Not here so much, but I remember being in Arizona, there were complete developments, brand new built, no one could afford to buy them. So anyway.
So I knew the definition thing obviously was going to be an issue here, so I started looking up some different definitions. So a few of them that I found, definition of occupy means to live in or use a piece of land or property either as an owner, a tenant, or illegally as a squatter. That's a whole other issue, but fortunately we don't have a lot of that going on here. But and then the definition for residence, I have a couple of them. First one is definition of legal residence. The residence where you have your permanent home or principal establishment and to where, whenever you are absent, you intend to return. Every person is compelled to have one and only one domicile at a time. Domicile is different than residence. The second definition,
Brian,
that I have.
As you say these, can you say where they're coming from? Like whose definitions they are?
Sure. I'd have to, I pulled them off the internet. It was a legal legal website. I would have to look it up again. I did not write
but
that
down.
But
they aren't in North Dakota law or?
No, they are not code. These are all just definitions that
okay.
I researched.
Okay.
So, and like Randy had done, I looked through North Dakota law too to find anything anywhere. And basically the most detailed one is in Game and Fish, but that deals with residency,
yeah.
Not a residence. It's mentioned in our mining, but not defined there. I know Randy had found the definition in the criminal section, which is somewhat helpful, but more that's more, I think, for differentiating between residential and business for different types of laws and ordinances and things like that. But the second one that I found was the act or fact of living in a place, and then 2A in that one is the place where one actually lives is distinguished from a domicile or place of temporary sojourn. A person can have more than one residence, but only one domicile. So now we're starting to get a little bit into more of this. A residence doesn't have to be your primary home. A residence can be something that is temporarily used.
Brian, can you repeat, please, the first one again?
The first one? Okay, definitions of a legal residence. The residence where you have your permanent home or principal establishment and whenever you are absent, you intend to return. Every person is compelled to have one and only one domicile at a time. So easiest way, I think, to explain part of where this definition goes to is if you want to look at snowbirds. They spend time in North Dakota, they spend time in Arizona. Now, they can either become residents of Arizona, and that's considered their primary residence and their Arizona residence, and then they come up and visit North Dakota, or you can maintain your residence here by paying taxes, income taxes, having post office box, physical property, driver's license, voting, different things like that. So some of these definitions of residence isn't maybe necessarily geared towards the house. And I do have a couple definitions for occupied residence that'll get a lot more clear.
Do you have this one? Occupied residence means a house or other type of shelter that is intended or used for human occupancy. And for the purposes of this definition, intended or used for human occupancy means running water and sanitation.
I do have that one. That would have been the first one that I would have read. So in that one, and I'm sure you were paraphrasing, and the only difference as I have means a house or other type of shelter that is intended or used for human occupancy and that has been occupied by humans for more than a total of 6 months in the last 2 years at that location. And then it says intended use for human occupancy means running water and sanitation are provided within the residence. So that one's pretty fair, but I mean, it's got that definition has a 6 month use, which is fairly broad, but I guess I look at it like I have my residence here, I have my lake cabin. I use it. I'm not there for 6 months
right.
total, but I use it for 6 months out of the year. And it is, so the next definition I kind of like a little bit better. Occupied residence means a residence that is suitable for human occupancy 50% or more of the year and is currently occupied or has been occupied in the last 5 years. And then it says, for the purposes of this definition, suitable for human occupancy means the residence provides for water and sanitation.
Is the 50%, and sorry, I'm not trying to hijack the conversation, but is the 50%, is that because of the seasons?
I believe
it's not 50% of the days. It's
no,
you
it's,
can use it 50% of the time, whether it's summer, you know, late spring, early fall.
Correct.
But if it weren't insulated, for example, and then once it got cold, it wouldn't be as feasible.
Correct. Yep. I believe that one to be more inclusive of seasonal type properties because, I mean, my lake cabin is insulated, but it's not exactly the most habitable place when you get below 20 below in the winter. I can heat it, but during the rest of the year, it's very, for 6 months out of the year, absolutely, it's very usable. I can have the water on and different things like that. So I think that one is a little bit more encompassing of something that might not be lived in, you know, year-round or capable
mm-hmm.
of being lived in year-round.
Kind of curious why we would need to be specific about the time in which it's available to be occupied.
We might not have to be. I guess if one of our concerns, though, is, and it's been brought up several times, lake cabins and things like that, that might be helpful for some of those. I know the lake that I'm on.
See, I think it's less helpful because if it's, say it's not insulated, you probably can't get 6 months out of a year in an uninsulated cabin.
Sure.
Because the freeze starts, you know, it's probably more like 5 months, or maybe it's 5.5, or, you know, depending on the year, it could be 4. So people shut it down. Does that mean it's less occupied when during the summer you're there every weekend? So to me, the timing, like specifying the times, I'm not sure what that gets us.
I mean, this is kind of our definition to create. These are just examples. So working in language of seasonal usage would be just as effective and not restricted so much to a time period. Seasonal usage, you might use it spring and summer or summer and fall or strictly winter, you know, some.
So by the first definition, the total of 6 months in the last 2 years, in this instance, if it were spring branding in the spring, they indicated it was used during deer hunting season. And as an occasional summer retreat, they probably used it in three different months each of the past 2 years.
Right. So were they living in it? No. But going back to the definition of occupy, to live in or use a piece of land or property, they were using the house. They were using the property. So,
Paying utilities.
Yes.
I mean, to me, it's not abandoned if you are paying utilities. That was the one piece of evidence that I felt was strongest for proving its occupancy.
I agree with that. Logically, it makes perfect sense because we live in a modern world, but can you live in a house and use candles to light it at night? You know, it's hard to imagine these days. That's how it was done once upon a time. But can you live in a house when it's really cold without heat? And you know, from a sanitary standpoint, the sanitation part would be, running water and sanitation. And actually, I think one difficulty in all of these things, I think it really depends on where you live. In what part of the country when you're writing these definitions?
Correct.
Because not everyone has North Dakota January cold.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we also don't have oppressive heat in the summer months like you might in southern states. So somewhere in between would be the Goldilocks, just right part, which might be, maybe it's Nebraska.
Better wait till this weekend before you say that about oppressive heat.
True, it's going to be a plus. Well, I mean, I think it was, where I'm at, I think it's a usable, occupiable, inhabitable home. And the company didn't exercise the level of due diligence they should have, even by their own admission. We drove by it and it just didn't seem like anyone would live there.
Do we, in doing this, have to come up with a definition? Because I guess I had more in mind. We would be pulling out things from the record that showed us that it was an occupied residence. And then, maybe not just, maybe that leads to a definition down the road, but do we need to write one?
I don't think we have to write one. If we can avoid writing a definition at this point, I would be happy to do so. That's ideal. I think, though, whether we define it or use the facts and whatnot, I think we are kind of coming to a definition.
Right, which we should. But it's, wordsmithing that. Yes, I don't know that that's needed in this order, but I mean, I guess I'm not going to be opposed to it if we want to, but it might go further than we need to go.
I think it does go further than we need to go. It seems to me that actually writing a definition and trying to encompass, other possibilities that could be questioned in future cases but aren't in question in this case. That's a whole separate process and should go either through the rulemaking or legislature.
Right.
One of those two processes.
Yeah.
I think in this case, we just need to make a determination.
Yeah. Well
based
again,
on the facts.
Yeah, and we have to deal with the present, but like I said at the beginning, I think that's something we have to add to the list for the upcoming session, and that is inhabitable residence or occupied residence. I'm wondering if this might help. And this is a part of code under housing discrimination, and I would have to look again where I drew this from. If it's 14-02.1-01. I can't remember when I copied this, if it was U.S. housing code or if it was out of state law, but it's one or the other, I believe, and it's under housing discrimination.
Well,
but
can you give me that site one more time?
14-02.5-01. Or Right. It's under, it's the definitions of various things under housing discrimination, which is, it was different, but it would give more backing. And when I go to the one point, are you trying to find it, Brian?
I'm on it, yep.
Is it?
That's North Dakota Century Code 1402.
Okay, North Dakota Century Code. So under number 8, dwelling means any structure or part of a structure that is occupied as or designed or intended for occupancy as a residence by one or more families. And then it goes over vacant land that is offered for sale. But really, I think that first part, doesn't that give us the backing in terms of definition since it's already a part of North Dakota code? I mean, it's their definition of a dwelling.
Correct, but our language doesn't say dwelling.
Well, maybe that's, again, and, we'll have to tie in.
I think that was probably maybe what the intent was. I have not had the opportunity yet to look at legislative intent on any of that. I don't know if that's something we'll find or not. But it's always helpful. As far as, let me see if I can pull this up real quick. Statutory interpretation does have, is set forth in Century Code, or I believe it's in Century Code. So, Chapter 102, Rules of Interpretation. So, North Dakota Century Code 10202, words to be understood in their ordinary sense. And then 03 says words and phrases must be construed according to the context and the rules of grammar and the approved usage of language. Technical words and phrases and such others have acquired a peculiar and appropriate meaning in law, or as defined by statute, must be construed according to such particular and appropriate meaning or definitions. A lot of times with Century Code, and I'll go back and look at that one. So it says the definitions in section 1402.4-02 maybe used to supplement these. Usually definitions are for that chapter only. They do give guidance at times, but there's a certain hierarchy of where, how things flow, and I think pulling one from that section would be a little bit lower than us just taking the plain meanings of the word.
Okay.
And again, because it's talking about dwelling instead of a residence, and quite frankly, if we changed residence to dwelling, that might solve a lot of our problems.
You're talking in code.
In code, in our right. In our section, yes.
So, I would agree. And forgive me, I'm going back to notes I had. I had pulled this March 25th prior to the hearing because that was to me, one of the most significant underlying aspects of the case.
Mm-hmm.
How do you identify or define occupied residence? That's really a shortcoming of sorts, but if we go back to legislative intent, maybe it's not as...
So
much of an issue.
Legislative intent is something that can be used, but it is fairly far down the list as well. It is important and it gives guidance, but other times it's further down the list and doesn't help out as much as it normally would. And I'd have to look at what legislative intent says in this one to see if it's directly on point. I think it leaves a lot more, but if we have to infer more out of some of that, then we're really kind of out in the weeds.
Can we go to what factors in the record we believe speak to why it is, why it is an occupied residence?
Absolutely.
Is that where you were going, Randy?
No.
Do you want to say something else on this other topic before we start doing that?
Well, I just was going to take one more stab at where I continue to come from on this, although I'm willing to work with you guys and continue to get into the weeds on occupied residence definition. But while I'm so frustrated oftentimes when there's some national or state level court case and I'm waiting for the court to lay this out and clarify how they interpret something, and then they never go there. There's some technical part of the case and they make a decision on that and never get to the definition that we're all waiting for. And now I'm kind of doing that too in a way, but not intentionally. I just continue to think that, if we were dealing with cultural resources and they went out and hit something that was really important, and then we found out that they never hired a third-party contractor to go out and walk the area and stuff. They just drove by and didn't see anything, so they determined there was nothing there. We would be wholly satisfied that they withheld information, not necessarily intentionally. They didn't, know something was there and choose not to tell us, but they didn't do a reasonably... I think you said due diligence. They didn't do any kind of reasonable effort to go out and check to make sure there wasn't something there. And that is what happened here. They looked at the plat book that's published once every 5 years or something by each county, and it didn't show up on there. They had the good news and didn't tell us. And while it was hard for the resident, for the Kessler son that was staying out there to... get a real good perspective of the distance, from down in the valley to what's going on top of the hill. It was darn sure easy when they were micro-siting to look down from the top of that hill down into the valley at that house and see that there was something there, but they chose not to even drive down in the yard to take a look until later when they needed access and they were looking at fences and trails and stuff for a road. But no policy on a second look to make sure that they had provided us all the occupied residences. They just gave us a map that left us feeling like we had a thorough analysis by them, and it clearly was unthorough, and I think that in itself is plenty to decide this case.
I use the term due diligence underscored. You said the same thing. Different way, but that they didn't. I forget exactly how you phrased it, but they didn't.
So did I. Forget.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I think you're speaking with specifically to the third piece of did they withhold information at the hearing? And I don't think that's what we're getting at. Did they do due diligence? What they're getting, what that gets to is, did they know it was an occupied residence? And they tried to hide that from us, and I don't believe that they did.
Well, I don't know what the company intentionally did at that level, but clearly they had people that were out there that knew something was down there and chose not to go find out.
But that's different from withholding. They made a bad assumption.
Yeah.
I think it's withholding evidence.
I think it speaks more to them. They made a bad calculation of whether it was occupied at the time, which is number one. And I mean, quite honestly, there's a fair number of holes in the Kessler's accounts too. I mean, they mentioned it vaguely at the hearing, but they certainly didn't come down strong on that point.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to, after being told by the judge to work out your differences, they went, met with the company on two occasions and signed easements with them. And in neither one of those meetings is there any evidence that there was not an email, not a letter, not signed anything, nothing added to the easements, nothing about their concerns on this. And then it was 2017, 2 years later, after it was constructed, and they brought it forward. So, I mean, I think if we're getting to, weaknesses, and there's weaknesses on both sides, but I think ultimately the onus is on the company under the Siting Act to determine whether it's occupied or not, And they didn't go the extra mile to say, simply call the people and ask them to confirm that it's not. And that's, the companies have to do that. There aren't that many structures out there to clear in that way, especially one that is in the plat book as being inhabitable, or I can't find that evidence or that exhibit, but the plat book showed that it was, and they're, you know, they're paying utilities on it, and so I just think that there was ways of them that they missed to identify number one. And I'm not interested in getting the weeds of saying what is an occupied residence in this, but I do think we need to be clear why we're determining based on what that it was occupied.
For section 3, we would have to show that it was something that they were required to tell us at the time and had knowledge of it and didn't. And basically, part of the problem is they determined that this was not an occupied residence, so they didn't feel like they had to bring it forward to us. Whereas if we look at it in number 1, we're not saying that they withheld it, it's just that they made the wrong determination. Mm-hmm. So I
think you have to, we have to send a message to all companies that you can't just assume.
Well, and you can't, when it's inconvenient, just close your eyes to it and present us with a map that here's what's out there and have ignored other things that are out there.
Is there enough in the record to, I mean, I think we're on solid ground in terms of the company not exercising due diligence.
I know from your guys' comments and even the company, it's their own testimony themselves, is they've admitted on the record during the hearing that there was more they could have done.
Right.
So I don't even think that we have to make that assumption ourselves. They were asked the questions.
Correct.
And they answered it. In hindsight, yes, we could have done things differently.
But proving that they withheld would be far more challenging, correct?
I think that would be more challenging. Looking at the record yesterday, and I wasn't able to read all of it, but what I did was tried to weed out a lot of the witnesses that really wouldn't have been required, but the Kesslers put their case forward the way they thought they needed to, basically ignoring the notice of hearing and all the noticed issues, and threw the kitchen sink and the neighbor's garage and everything at us. I guess we got so much information that was just really maybe not all that helpful. But what it seemed to be really clear for me and undisputed was we had the hearing. Whether or not this shouting match, admonishment, quiet, however it was told to them that they need to be quiet and whatever, both sides disagree on that. But both parties agreed that there was a meeting that happened after that. And that meeting happened at the O&M building north of New Salem. The Kesslers were there. The Minnesota Power representatives admitted to being there. The Kesslers remember them being there, who they talked to. There was very little dispute in that. And what I kind of gleaned in on at that point was, at that point, the Kesslers were shown a map that had all the turbine locations on it. And so whether or not they had a chance to at the hearing and whatever else, at that point, the Kesslers were put on notice of all the turbine locations and what was determined as occupied and unoccupied residence. And I have to read it a little bit closer. And again, I was trying to get through a lot of information yesterday. I guess I didn't ever really figure out or make a determination on whether or not it was brought to Minnesota's Power's attention at that time. I think the Kesslers alleged that they said at that point again that their son was going to move in the future, or that they had use for it in the future. Minnesota Power says that they didn't. But at that point, I think it's very clear and it's agreed by both sides that at that point, that tower location was known, because I know that was kind of in dispute even at the hearing. They said that the map wasn't adequate and all those other things, but that was just something that I picked up on and felt like it was worth writing down, and I think that was around page 740 in the second transcript.
Okay. Well, I guess from my standpoint, I think we're on the same page except for number three. But we could certainly move forward on number one because we agree on that. So that brings us to number two, what's the remedy? And I think the remedy that they ask for is to move turbine 441.
There really is no other remedy.
Right. So, I'm comfortable with that remedy.
It is a potential remedy. Although it seems like a very, very long shot, but because I think this has already been attempted between the company and the Kesslers to come up with some type of an agreement.
I don't feel so because they've had a lot of time to do that.
That's good.
And haven't reached it. Now, if we weigh in, we just tip the scales, is all. And I think they had time to reach a settlement of some type. It wasn't done. If we're finding it in violation, they need to move.
No,
it.
And
that's just the end of
and
it.
And that's a fair point. We certainly don't want to become a broker in a negotiation between the company and the landowner. I get that. It's a remedy, but it's beyond our scope of authority and where we should be weighing in, so move the turbine. Could we, are they ordered correctly? Number one, I think we're all on the same page. Number two would be the remedy. We're all on the same page, I believe. But would number two be, I think it's highly defendable that the company failed to exercise the appropriate level of due diligence in the siting process?
Well, I think that's exactly what finding on one says, that their methods for determining what an occupied residence was or wasn't, wasn't inclusive enough, and that they missed a residence that, while maybe nobody was living in it at the time, was used and useful and in use. And it wasn't, and if we're going to, thing with the conflicting he said, she said testimony is kind of as the finders of fact, we get to give weight to that evidence. We get to say what we believe and from who. So I guess when you have one side saying one thing and one side saying the other, it makes it easy because you can, you either believe them or you don't. So it works out.
Well, I think to that point though, on these, I can get to a decision without even considering a lot of that. He said, she said.
Sure,
that.
Absolutely.
I think there's more clear points, like
yes.
The utility bills.
Yep.
Yeah.
The utility bills, the plot map, the, it was mowed, it was, tidy. They're in conversations with these people all the time. They could have asked.
Yeah.
Recently. Well, it was recently painted. But
Reliance on satellite imagery, too, is, that stuff's only, there's probably pictures of me mowing a yard from a satellite in a house I haven't owned for 10 years. That's not updated all that frequently.
Right.
I would say that's a pretty poor method of determining what, you can tell if there's structures there or not to take the next step and go look, but determining residency from that I don't think would be a very useful tool, and that was one of the tools they used.
So under number one, the two terms that running water and sanitation?
Yep.
I'm not discounting the utility bill. But I think that's a little easier to pick on.
Yeah. But it's a fact in this case, and we are going to the next level of the definition, and I think we got to stick at what the facts are here.
Well, here's the thing with well water, though,
you're not going to get water without electricity. So the electricity bill does show that, and it shows that there's a well. One of those meter readings is a well, so that electrical bill does show that water is there. And that was in the testimony from the Kesslers.
I know, I just haven't found a legal definition that declares electricity as necessary.
We don't need to have a legal definition
The definitions I brought were to give us a basis and a starting point to think about what occupancy means and or occupied means and what residence means. I don't bring them as an end-all be-all. I bring them as a here's what's gone on. I mean, these definitions have come from other states, from other cases, for other reasons, and it just gives us a starting point for us to, you know, look at what our definition of it is in our section of code.
Okay, but here's the question I'm trying to get to. I haven't gotten there yet. So I'm giving examples. You have, say we listed 5 points why this is an occupiable or inhabitable residence or occupied residence. And one of the points isn't viewed universally as a requirement to support. Do the other four still carry the day if one of them is, or if one falls, do the other four fall?
Well, if we had a definition that had all those things, then yes, they might be inclusive. But what we have here is you guys will make a decision based on the facts and the record and de facto kind of be creating a definition. But that doesn't preclude us from defining it in the future, which I think would be easily done through probably rulemaking to get a definition in our rules yes, it's not in century code, but for our intents and purposes, everybody knows what we're looking at for that sort of definition. But I think we're looking at this as we don't have an occupied residence definition, but here are the reasons why we believe this is an occupied residence. We're not making a legal determination or anything like that. We're saying this is the record in front of us. This is the question. Here's the fact that support our decision to say we believe this was an occupied residence.
Okay. So.
And it ties to the Siting Act.
Correct.
So the order would not be compromised?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
It's this case, the facts, and what we're looking at. I think that those should be harmonious with any sort of definition we come up with in the future. I mean, I don't see that any of them, you know, by us laying out the facts and this on why we think it's occupied, I don't think that would hinder us at all in the future as far as coming up with a definition or having a definition that would be contrary to this one instance either.
Okay, perfect. Now, I think we have to ask I feel it's an important question to ask because if this is challenged, which there is a likelihood, the decision will be challenged because it's a very expensive proposition to dismantle and take down a turbine.
Mm-hmm.
Very expensive. So I don't want to make the same mistake by just assuming that. That's why you're here, to say no. That's not a concern, you know, in terms of layering these things in.
I think this isn't the appropriate process for creating that definition. It's very sensitive. You can lay out several very obvious things that we think of as real commonplace or normal for a residence. You know, maybe electricity, water, septic system. But then you could also find a very occupied residence that might be missing one of those.
Sure.
For some reason that we're not thinking of. You know, they use a generator instead of the electric company because they're 40 miles from electricity or whatever the case may be, exceptions. But in this case, what we do have is evidence that they did have electricity, that they did have water, that they did have a septic system, and that there was maintenance going on there.
Mm-hmm. And that's why in definition and in law, you'll have lists a lot of times. It'll say to include but not limited to running water, septic or, you know, sewer or electricity and different things like that. So you can create a definition within a non-exclusive list that includes a lot of the commonplace things that you think of, but it also would include common sense things or other items that didn't get thought of at the time.
I think this order, though, should be limited to specifically things
Absolutely.
That we know on
yep.
this case.
Yeah.
Yep, and it has to be. Yep. Otherwise, we're just, you know, throwing out arbitrary things that didn't exist at the time, and it would be difficult for the company not to have an issue with that, because it's like, okay, we had occupied structure, we didn't really have a set definition, but, you know, looking at the facts and things that they could have known or should have known at that time, I think is a lot more, is a very sensible approach to take.
When I think, you know, tying, just again, I keep coming back to the Siting Act requires that we provide permits that minimize impact.
Mm-hmm.
To people living around it, and you know, there's a lot of good language in the Siting Act itself, and one of the criteria is occupied residence and distance to occupied residence, and that was included in this order for this project. So, you know, with all that in mind, here's what we're looking at as why we think this is an occupied residence, and list all those things out, and you know, that an occupied residence in view of the Siting Act might be a little different than an occupied residence in other things and other
Absolutely.
And other definitions in law. And so that's why I think it's it'll be helpful what we set out there, and I'm sure it will get challenged. And then the courts will say whether it was reasonable or not for us to base it on those things.
Correct.
And they'll probably define it.
They may.
So.
Or they may send
it
back
to the
us,
legislature, right.
No, absolutely.
Does it matter what the primary and secondary uses are of a utility bill and or well?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think we're really digging it. And it's easy to try to think ahead and try to get it exactly right, but again, we have to look at the case in front of us, the facts of this case, and use those to get to our decision, because we don't really have these other things that we all wish we had that would make it easier, but we don't have them, and you know, definitions and stuff in the future will ensure that we get what we need. Mm-hmm. Or it'll either be there or won't in the future, but for right now, this is where we're at, so.
Now, on that question, I might think that the primary and secondary may be relevant, you know, but I think in this case, it depended on the season, what the primary and secondary, to some extent, uses of the utilities were. Sometimes it was more to support the cattle operation, and sometimes it was to support people's inhabiting it. But, I mean...
But you said that's not a concern.
I don't think so, because if we look at, there was, the utility bills were brought in, there was low usage years where there wasn't much power being used, and I think if we look back at the record, that's when it was being used for a day or two here and a day or two there, and it wasn't a lot of power usage. And then you see power usage increase when somebody started staying there more frequently or living there. I think is when you saw the big jump, is when the one son moved in, or they began to get it, you know, a little bit more ready for them to move in. So I think if we're looking at, you know, the reason you guys asked for those, because you wanted to know, it's like, well, did they even have water there? Did they have sewer there? So we asked for those things, and we were looking at it to see, was this house even able to be lived in? And they said, yeah, we had power there, and the power brings water, and also, I can't remember if that was a heat source as well, or if that was propane. I can't remember if they said it was electric or propane. I'd have to go back in the record.
I think it was still a forced air.
Yeah, so it was integral into maintaining the, you know, even though if you're not there, you still have to heat it to make sure your pipes don't freeze and other damage is caused either. So,
well, especially when you're living there, seasonal homes, people do drain the lines.
Mm-hmm. You can winterize, correct?
Not that I don't know if that did or didn't occur. I don't think it's
okay.
Important or critical factor, but
so can we move forward with an drafting of an order?
Yep.
And I think Brian and I are on the same side on number three, so I don't know how you want to deal with that particular piece of it, Randy, but maybe you could just take a peek at the order and go from there. Because right now I would see the order saying, was it occupied residence at the time? Yes. If so, what are the remedies? Remove the turbine. Number three, did they withhold information? No.
And I will either provide I will provide commentary on that. I don't know if it'll just be oral or if I'll write a separate concurring opinion.
Sure.
Well, do you have something specific that you can say, here is why they withheld information?
Well, I don't think I need to know why they withheld it, but they didn't put it on the map.
So
that's what I know. You know, I have my suspicions of why, but I don't think it matters. They provided a map of occupied residences. However, it also included some unoccupied residences. But this one was not on there. I don't think it matters why, and I don't think it matters whether it was intentional or not. They did not provide it.
I know where you're coming from. I'm not disagreeing with how you got there. I'm just trying to think of something that, and that is specific, but did they fail to mark turbine 441 on the exhibit map? And I think the answer is it was on the map.
I believe from testimony and the exhibits and everything that I looked at yesterday, turbine 441 was on the map. The section 15 farmyard structure, whatever we're going to call it, that was not on the map the day of the hearing. So for violation of number three, for where you're going, Randy, is we would have to find facts in the record to support that they should have known prior to that hearing that was an occupied residence and that they didn't provide that to us.
Or included it on the map like several other unoccupied ones, and they could have pointed out, this one here it is, but you know, we don't think it's occupied.
But but those ones that were technically unoccupied were listed as occupied on the map. They were listed as an occupied residence. So that's the reason why this one didn't make the map, is because it was determined to be an unoccupied residence. And again, hindsight looking back, they even admitted that was maybe wrong, but through the methods that they described on how they were making these determinations, Because that plat book didn't have that listed as anybody living there. I think it was just stated who owned it, but did not state in the plat book that it was lived in. That's where their chain cut off and why it didn't make it onto the map.
Well, and the problem is, according to their testimony, there's no formal or routine process to double check whether buildings are occupied.
Right.
That was the whole problem.
Well, withholding information, is that the same as saying they were dishonest? Or not exercising due diligence, just in layman terms, does that mean they were just sloppy in how they went about in that particular farmyard?
I'm not labeling them one way or the other. I'm just saying it's not on the map.
Kind of seems like you are. No.
Well,
they provided a map. It's not on there.
And I think Brian's explanation is as clear as any about why it wasn't, because they determined the ones that were on there were had been determined as occupied residences, even though they were uninhabited.
We're going to get to the same point.
That's why it wasn't on the map.
And I guess I didn't feel that even. I know the Kesslers had made statements and allegations and testified to the fact that they'd been telling people for a long time that this was going to be used, but then the company did bring to light, I think, something that was really important too. They laid out the timeline of all those other options and everything else, and when the Kesslers were stating, and I know that it's a long time ago, and there was, I'm sure, a ton of people they were talking to, but up until 2009, they couldn't have been telling Minnesota Power or Ollie that they were going to be using this, because they weren't even talking to them about it, because it was optioned to a different company. So I guess for me, where it seemed like the first time that, and this is just about who you're going to believe and whatnot, but I don't know that it was real clear in the record that Minnesota Power was put on notice prior to the hearing that was an occupied residence. Certainly after that, I think there was more in the record to support that statements were made or that they were put on notice. But again, I'm not saying that there was, I'm just saying it seemed like time-wise and between the discrepancies in testimony about who said what and when, it was more likely that that didn't happen until day of the hearing or after. So that's why I'm a little soft on three, but I can definitely look at the record again to see if there's anything to support that it was real solid before.
And we're kind of over time here too, so like has been said, it probably gets to just the same point based on one and two. Do you feel you have enough information from us?
Absolutely.
To create an order on one and two?
Absolutely. So finding on one of occupancy and that the turbine is to be moved, removed, what do you do?
Well, I would think
it has to be 1,400 feet from, they have to comply with the order.
Sure.
Less than 1,400 feet.
Well, I think this has to be removed. You can't make it 1,400 feet without removing it. But in order to just move it, to a different location, won't they need to do a study of that and get an approval? We approved these locations. Did we approve somewhere else?
You're talking a variance to the order if they want to put it 1,500 feet away?
Well, I mean, it would be a different location, so doesn't that need to be
I believe the footprint, so they could make the certifications that this will not impact any excludence or avoidance areas, and they could move the location. I'm not 100% sure, unless there was also an alternative tower site that was approved at the time that they could move it to, but I'm sure they don't want to be taking that tower away from I believe it was the Lennox who owned it. I mean, that's a source of income from them. So I think they would like to keep it with them. But that would have been a good one for that.
That's up to them.
I think this order just has to do with that this needs to be removed.
Correct.
And they're going to have to determine whether they rebuild elsewhere. And if they do, whether they need a a certificate from us, or if this one covers it, so.
Right.
True.
We can't force them to remove and replay.
We can ask that it be removed from that location and that it be brought into compliance. I don't think we can specify anything other than that. As long as it complies with the order and
right.
and the new location, if it needs approval, is approved, whether it's certifications or we have to actually approve a new site. But I don't think we can say you got to move it X amount of more feet or anything like that.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. This is a financial hit if they just take it down completely. And then Lennox, correct?
Yep.
They're out.
Yeah.
So that's why I was asking, well, can we, and I kind of knew the answer already, but.
Okay.
Okay.
I think we're good.
All right.
So I would like to wrap this up, though. So I know our next commission meeting is it the 14th, 12th or 14th?
13th, I think. Something like that.
Something like that. That week. Is it possible to get this by then?
I will try.
Okay.
It's the 14th.
Yeah. So just a draft. That would, I think, require us to have a draft next week. Would it? I'm looking at my calendar here.
Well, we all know Steve loves a good late add to the agenda, so.
14th is, yeah, it's the 14th.
It's
14th. And so next, like, Thursday would be, or one of those days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is a day where you should have it to me and then everybody, but I would say get it to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just send it to me.
Sure.
So everybody has maximum amount of time, including you. And then if we can try to have it on the, you know, finalized by that 9th, or would you guys be comfortable adding it that next week, the 12th or 13th, or not?
It would sure be nice if we had it by that Friday, because I know we have a hearing on that on the 12th, and then I have a presentation to give to an outside group out of town on Tuesday. And so I'm not going to have a lot of time to review. I'm also will say you've held the siting portfolio for quite a while, and you're a pretty good writer and editor that tends to make changes on things. So I'm okay with you having it a day or two before us, because me finding a technicality somewhere and then you rewriting the whole paragraph. Sometimes I like to have you have your stuff
sure
even before, but I sure would like to see a reviewed draft by Friday if it was possible.
Friday the 9th,
but if that became impossible, I'd also like to see this get done at that meeting. And
yeah.
So if it requires burning the midnight oil around that hearing and my presentation, then I'll do that too.
Okay. All right, anything else for the good of the order? If not, good job, everybody. Thank you. We that concludes.